I'm Bill Sinyard. I guess they call me a retired teaching elder because I don't have a pulpit right now. 10 years ago, I left a ministry here and started Gospel App Ministry. The goal of Gospel App Ministry is to really apply the gospel to mental health of Christians in particular, but also we're using it as an evangelistic tool. Because the whole world, if they're under 35, are turned on to mental health and mental health logic and such. I'm a big fan of the attachment theory, the John Bowlby English version of attachment theory, because I think it also syncs with the gospel. We can talk about that sometime if you want. But I actually use that to present the gospel to 20-somethings, 30-somethings, and teenagers. I am a grandfather. I have had three teenagers who we have survived. I'll tell you one story about my son with his permission as we go through this. I'm going to say this from a mental health perspective. I mean, I'm buying into the evangelistic input that we're talking about today. I think that's fantastic. We talk about unreached people groups. So here's what I'm going to say. First of all, our teens are largely unreached people groups. And not their brains. If they've been churched, if they've been in the bubble, they got the gospel. They understand what's going on. They can check the boxes. I'm talking about their midbrains, their subconscious. Here's what I learned. By the way, I did my doctoral thesis on biblical forgiveness. And here's one thing I learned from neuroscience. I think it's golden. We need to get this word out there. Did you know that your brains are created to not forgive? Doesn't that explain a lot?
Wow.
Yeah. Because your brains are created to protect you from getting hurt. And if your brain says, if I just forgive that person, I'm re-hurting myself. Isn't that interesting? So when we're teaching on forgiveness, you know, basically I was re-hurting victims, asking them to do something that God didn't even do, which was forgive people without justice. So we learned how to do it a different way. The same thing with teenagers. Teenagers, come on in. We have stuff here. Teenagers are, their subconscious are asking two questions, and I'm going to tell you what those questions are. And once you know those questions, you can become the answer, parent, caregivers, and guardians, and the gospel can become that answer. So for two stages of life, two age groups, which I'm going to talk about very, very quickly, we can talk about the other ones, but those in particular, if we do a good job in these two age groups, according to neuroscience, according to attachment theory, if we do a good enough job, and I'll explain what good enough, come on in, what good enough is, they will grow up to be secure, all other things equal, secure adults. If we don't do a good enough, they will struggle with mental health issues, emotional health issues, relational issues. All of this has been researched out the wazoo lately, and they'll be addiction prone. So I'm going to show you what the good enough is in two age groups, and the reason I picked these two age groups is because that's the time neurologically when our brains are popping, when they're forming connections or they're pruning connections. And it's in those two age groups that we can actually make a big, 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 big difference in the relational, mental, and ultimately spiritual health of our children. Okay, so far? On your table, I didn't know how many people would come, so I just made 40 of these. If you don't have one, look around the other tables. If you don't, contact me and I can get you. It's copies of the slides I'm going to use. And it's a design of teenage attachment styles. I have a free church resource. It's online. I'm begging you to use it. It's called Good Enough Parent. GoodEnoughParent.online. It's free. It's designed for frustrated Christian parents of teens and tweens.
Thank you.
I know. What else is there, right? And it's also good for parents who are going to be parents to learn the brain science behind their infants' brains. I'm going to talk about infancy as well. GoodEnoughParent.online. And please use it, pass it on. I'm going to suggest evangelically, I was a church planter and I was a pastor of two struggling churches, but if you want to help your community, if you want to get it seen by your community, do birthing classes with some of the stuff that I'm going to show you, and then do classes for parents of teenagers based on stuff that I'm going to show you, and you'll be seen in the community. You might even do some good. All right, you also have, here's another information thing about that. Good enough parent. This I will talk about as well. This is critical. Good enough parent. We send people short videos, tips, about 10-minute tips, one a day for 15 days for parents. And the first couple of them are on this. It's a simple and cluttered gospel. Parents get depressed. They get beat up. They feel like losers. They feel like they're not good enough parents. And generally, often, they don't want to talk to their friends about it because they don't want to carry the shame. So what we do is we help them remind their midbrain, if you will, that unreached people group of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I'll read this to you later as well. All right, let's see. I think I covered most of that stuff. My passion, if I was to put an overarching umbrella, and I talk about this in three or four continents and countries, is this. The core of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the core of the Bible, if you want to boil it down to one phrase, I'm going to argue it's this. It's God's love for the unlovable. God's love for the theologically, personally, relationally, identity level unlovable. That's what your teens are looking for. That's that love for them because they're feeling unlovable, typically. All right, so we talked about the handouts. So here's a teaser. If parents can do one thing in these two age groups I'm talking about, if they can do it one out of three interactions, 30% of the time, according to neuroscientists, good ones, and according to attachment theory scientists, if we can do one thing one out of three times, well, our kids will enter the next stage of life more secure, all other things equal. If we don't do that one thing well enough, our kids will go into the next stage insecure, have difficulty emotionally regulating, they'll be addiction prone. For infants, it's shown to actually shown tendencies towards ADHD, difficulties in school, and so forth. So I'll tell you what that one thing is. That's my teaser. All right. Hold on, let me figure this out. Well, I'm just going to have to do it by hand. All right, crisis, mental health crisis in the United States. It's not just the United States. I've been talking to people in South Africa and Australia, but it's big time here in the United States. The CDC says suicide, homicide rates are the highest they've been in decades. 42% of adolescents are experiencing severe sadness and hopelessness. This is the secular CDC saying this. That's up 50% from 2011. COVID has a lot to do with that. But it was going up before that rapidly. Severe sadness and hopelessness, that's our teenagers. 57% teenage girls. And the latest numbers show that the group that's getting really beat up and hopeless and is leaning into suicide ideation is teenage girls. 70% LGBTQ+. 22% of all students have considered attempting suicide. That's up 36%. It's a crisis for this age group, adolescents. Anxiety is sky high. Loneliness is sky high. Gender dysphoria and confusion, sky high. Church attendance is down. Social media use, sky high. And I'll tell you why. And I'm gonna build on this and get a little teaser. Social media is asking the two questions, the two subconscious questions that your teenager's asking. They're answering them. not well, but in a vacuum, that's the only game in town. And what I found working with churches in three continents is that we're not quite sure how to do this very well. But if we changed, I think we'd gather more attention and gather more students. So who do we blame? Well, we have to do it manually. Who do we blame? Well, we can blame degeneration of family unit. But that's been happening for 40 years. We can blame education system, the bickering between parents and staff and teachers. It's huge. I'm working with the folks here in Jefferson County. It's explosive right now. Everybody's frustrated, and there's tension, right? I won't go into that. We can talk about the decline of institutional religion. We can talk about social media. And again, social media, I think, is just doing it right. Not well, but they're doing it right. You'll see what I mean by that. 46% of adolescents, this is age 13 to 17, say social media actually makes them feel worse about their body type. So it's not doing it well, but it's doing it, and kids are attracted to it. So likely all of those things have guilt on their hands, but what can parents do to actually push back on that? Again, I'm going to talk to two age groups. These are the big age groups neurologically where things are happening. The first one is infants. You probably know this. If not, this is fascinating. I'm a data nerd. We are born with 100 billion neurons. We're born with 100 billion brain neurons. Over the 2 years between third trimester and age two, we develop 1,000 trillion connections. That little infant, connections, meaning this is the thought process, this is how we walk, this is how I cry, this is how I emotionally regulate, this is who I am, this is my identity, this is all that stuff. Do I see the world a safe place? It happens in 2 years. We now know, attachment theory and neuroscience coming together here, that parents can actually affect what grows, what pathway grows, and what doesn't. And the key is this thing called attunement. We've all heard of that, probably. If not, we should be saying this from the pulpit. We should be saying it from the nursery. We should be handing out pamphlets to our neighbors. Attunement. Here's what one scholar said about attunement. Attunement is the process of a parent feeling the child's feelings, absorbing those feelings, reflecting them back to the baby, so the baby knows he has been seen, heard, and understood. I want that. I do marriage counseling. Both want that. The people in your churches looking up to God, they want that. It seems like God actually made us wanting that and needing that from others, dependent upon others, and it starts in infancy. Attunement communicates to the child, I get you. I understand. I empathize with what you're feeling. A baby is so in tune with mom or caregiver that when she holds, rocks, and cuddles her infant, the heartbeat of her baby synchronizes with her own. We know this from brain mapping. When that happens, when the caregiver holds the baby and they look eye to eye, but not just look, there's a connection. There's a psychical brain chemical. And see, moms know this. Their brains start booming with dopamine. They get dope hits. They get oxytocin, which bonds them to the baby. Their serotonin levels drop, so they're calmer. It's a beautiful thing. It's a high, and the baby gets the same thing. And in that time, the baby's brain is constructing those pathways, and good ones, like explosive. When the baby is set down and when the baby's crying, he or she is developing other pathways. The world's not safe. I'm not lovable. I'm not okay. Are you with me? So if parents can attune with their baby one out of three times, all other things equal, the baby will enter the next stage of life secure. They will trust adults better. They will trust teachers better. They will play better with friends. They'll explore the world more. One out of three times. That's not three out of three. It's not even two out of three. We can train this. We can teach this to our parents and to our neighbors. I think it also, even though I can't prove it because you can't scientifically study this, but doesn't it make sense if I'm comfortable and confident, if I'm trusting people and adults, I'm actually more open to trust God. You're with me? Humanly speaking. Here's another quote. I like this from David Arredondo. This mother and this baby are in a process, a form of reciprocal connectedness called attunement. His eyes and her eyes are locked together, not locked together, but dancing together, really. And in this child's brain, 1,000 connections per second are being formed, and the child is learning to read facial expression. This child is learning about the world. He's learning about the world is responsive or not responsive. He's learning that he can be an object of delight. Our teens have identity issues. Have you heard that? I'm going to suggest because they didn't get this in infancy enough. Are you with me? He's learning that he can be an object of delight. Can he delight in others? He's learning what he's worth. He's learning what the world is like. He's learning so much so quickly we can't even conceive of it. And it's happening when the caregiver attunes 1 out of 3 times. Someone said that that attunement is as important to the child's growing brain as emotion and food is to the body. Isn't that fascinating? We now know from longitudinal studies that go from infancy all the way into adulthood, if that infant is not getting the enough, the good enough, the 1 out of 3, the connectivity, we now know that we can actually predict these negative things happening. They will have later learning difficulties. Isn't that amazing? They will have increased addiction proneness in adolescence and adulthood. They've done studies with chronic addicts on the streets of Vancouver, where I did a church, and they found that almost all of them, and more research is being done, almost all of them had, zero attunement. Proneness to ADHD. Isn't that fascinating? That's just recent discovery. Proneness to anxiety. Remember I said anxiety is sky high? Fearfulness and subsequently loneliness. The reduction of ability to self-regulate emotions. Impulse control. The baby does not know how to soothe itself because the parents haven't taught the baby how to self-regulate emotionally. And so they go into teenage years and little Johnny pops off when you ask him to eat his Brussels sprouts. Well, I don't like those either. Broccoli. And you wonder, why is this happening? Why are they cutting themselves? Why are they dressing outlandishly? Why are they pushing back? Why are they barking back? Well, partly they're trying to emotionally self-regulate and they don't know how. And with all the chemicals, we'll talk about adolescence in just a second. But if we can get parents of infants to do this more in 10 years, 12 years, 14 years, I'm going to suggest that teenage anxiety is going to be reduced. You with me? Depression is going to be reduced. Do you know what mass murderers have in common? Study was done, 50 years of mass murder. It's 2/3 of all of them, 100% of those under roughly 25. Do you know what they have in common? Suicide by cop. Every one of them wanted to be killed. They couldn't self-regulate. All right, so this is very important. This is so fascinating. Teens are asking 2 subconscious questions. Babies, attachment theorists say, are asking a single question. They don't know that because they can't shape it in their head, but this is the reaction that they're having. Here it is. Is there anybody out there for me? So when they're crying in their crib, they might be hungry or hurt or wet or whatever, scared, and they're crying, and all they're doing is there anyone out there? And what they're looking for is a friendly, comforting, safe face right in front of them that says, hey, baby, baby, goo, 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 I'm here. That's your teen, too. It's just a little more complicated, and they're not interested in the goo-goo part, right? Don't do that. Okay, adolescents. We can come back and talk about children. So anyway, churches, evangelically, we could provide a great service for our communities by teaching young couples how to attune and the importance of attunement. Yeah? Okay, adolescents. I was talking to somebody in the back. Right at puberty, what happens is your teenage brain booms like a chia pet. Remember them? the connectivities just explode. This is how God made it for some reason. But they're walking along, and all of a sudden, boof. And how they explain it is, I just feel like everything's faster. I feel emotions are faster, and data and connections, right brain, left brain. And they're so exciting. And then they got the brain hormones cooking in too. But they go from that, a representative of neurons, to boom. And then later on in the teenage years, 16, 17, 18, their brain has pruned out the connections that don't work. Use it or lose it. So if you're a parent of teenagers or you're working with teenagers, they're popping off, they're cutting themselves, they're doing drugs, they're joining gangs, they're pushing, fighting, and you're going, well, I screwed up when they were infants. What do I do? Well, God has given us a mulligan, neuroscientifically. A redo. So during adolescence, the same thing is happening that is happening during infancy. And if parents can do adolescent attunement enough, and that's why we titled our online resource Good Enough Parent, 1 out of 3 interactions, not 90, not 60, good luck with that. I don't know anybody can do that. But if you can do 1 out of 3, so you screw up 2 and you intentionally do a third, I'll tell you some of the tips. The brain connections that last are, I'm worthy, I am somebody, the world is safe, my parents have my back. And good enough parenting, we say, the goal of good enough parenting is not to stop your teen from going crazy, because they can't, their prefrontal cortex is offline and the brain chemicals are going, right? But we want them to be your best friend when they're 30. So you have to lay that foundation now, and you know, that's why they pay parents the big bucks, right, to raise teens. So your teens are asking 2 questions. You and I talked about this. Here they are. And so is there anyone out there for me? Breaks up into, is there anyone out there who has my back? When I mess up, and I'm going to push, I'm going to cut myself, I'm going to overeat, undereat, I'm going to do drugs, I'm going to lie and go over to the neighbor's house when you told me I shouldn't. I'm going to push, I'm going to probe, and I just want to know if you've got my back. Number 2 is, am I enough? Am I actually enough for anybody to love me as I am? I want that too. The gospel answers both of those questions. There is one person, Christian, in the universe who absolutely has your back, and you are enough because of what Jesus did. The gospel, we're all over this, right? Social media, the reason it's growing is it addresses those 2 questions. You want connectedness? Get on our site. Connect, 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 like, sin. And are you enough? Oh, you're enough. You're enough. You're beautiful. And it attracts kids who want those 2 questions. And if their parents are not doing that enough, if the youth group's not doing that enough, here's what we do in youth groups. Look, it's well-meaning. Those kids are going to go to unis pretty soon, right? And they're going to be exposed to all kind of craziness. So we got to load them up with systematic theology. Right? They got to read something by Packer or somebody. We're going to load them up with apologetics and the 3 circles. Those are all good. But they're not listening. You with me? They could care less. They'll do it if that's what it means to be connected. And they'll do it to get the youth pastors to kind of go, you're a good student. But their heart's not in it, because this is what they want. So we have to change how we teach. This is what they want. Young Life is all over this, by the way. I don't know if you have Young Life where you are, and I don't know if they're good where you are, but they are great here, because that's what they do. And then they tell them the gospel. Here's a great quote, and I'll give you an example of my own life. I love this. I use this for adults as well. This is Yuri Bronfenbrenner, a child psychologist. Every child, he says, needs at least one adult who is irrationally crazy about him or her. What? Right? And not just child. I think my wife wants that. Actually, I'm pretty sure we've been to counseling. I want that. And again, the gospel, this is a great presentation of the gospel. There is, if you're a Christian, there is one person in the universe, Jesus, who is irrationally crazy about you. I mean, irrationally, right? Look at you. Let me tell you a story where I started to learn this. My son is in his 30s now, but when he was a teenager, he did a study abroad program, Rotary, down in Arequipa, Peru. The idea is you take your senior year and go down. The kid was great character, sports, church. This guy is great. And I have his permission to say this, by the way. He was a fantastic kid. The Rotary went, oh, you're just the kind of ambassador for the United States. Went down to Peru. He's supposed to be there a year. We got a call in 5 months. Come and pick up your kid. He would have been the first high school student to flag out of the Rotary program in South America in their entire existence. Well, I thought, damn, I was hurt, I was disappointed, angry, I felt my fault, I'm shame prone. We were invited to come down and pick him up. We were shuttled from the airport to the meeting where they were going to drum him out. So we sat there, my wife and I, and heard adult after adult after adult tell stories about my kid that blew my head. He partied, disrespected his house parents, he lied, and I went, what's going on? I stopped the meeting. I was a former businessman, you know that sometimes I stop meetings. And I said, I got to talk to my son. We walked out the back of the building by this ditch, this smelly sewer, I remember it. And I'm walking along, and man, I'm feeling like I'm about to blow. I'm going to lay some Dobson lumber on him, you know what I mean? I'm going to do some tough love for my boy. And I'm about to say something, and the Holy Spirit, I think, grabs my voice box, and here's what came out. I said, son, I am hurt by what I'm hearing. I am angry about what I'm hearing, and we need to talk about that, but let's put that aside for now. I want to let you know that no matter what happens here tonight, if we have to take you home, I've got your back. It's you and me. We're in this together. I love you. This does not change that. I would buy stock in you right now. I believe that you're going to change the world. He starts bawling. I'm doing it now. He starts bawling. I start bawling. We're hugging there with the smell of that sewer. He says, even recently, he says that was one of the defining moments of his life. Well, let me say this. I thought I'd told him that before. I know I had told him that before. The problem is 1 out of 3. I didn't tell him 1 out of 3. So he's pushing. And I won't go into all of that, but you can see what he was doing now. He's pushing for that. And one of the other things I learned, and here, stand up, I want to show you something. This is something I have a psychologist tell me this is a real deal. We call it jokingly the shoulder move in Good Enough Parent. But what I did, just by instinct, he's about your height too, is you do this. You put your hand on the back shoulder. It's safe. I use this for marriage counseling. I use this for all kind of things now. And you sort of move them near, you kind of put some tension on them so you get their eyes. So they're not looking around. If they drop, you kind of push a little bit. You don't go like this. That's a little weird, right? But this, so you get that attunement, right? It actually is effective. It somehow lowers boundaries in the brain. Thank you. We call it the shoulder move. I don't know what it is, but I've had a psychologist tell me that's a real, real, real deal. So just try that. You can do it with toddlers. You can do it with grade school kids. You can do it with your pastor, your elder. All right, let's see. So 30% of the time. So your youth group, in your context, whatever the context would be, it's that place that communicates to kids 1 out of 3 times that because of Christ, you can say that, because of Christ, you're special. You're going to change the world. I believe you. I've got your back. I don't agree with what you did. I think what you did was wrong. You lied to me and you shouldn't have. We got to talk about that. But I'm going to say, in spite of all of that, shoulder move, you and me till the end. You're with me? Simple. One out of three. The Good Enough Parent program, we have 15 tips like that that parents can use to communicate that to their kids. It's golden. It is absolutely golden. All right, let me keep going. Your teens are looking for, enoughness. This is from David Zoll, Seculosity. Listen carefully. This is what they're thinking when they're talking about enoughness. Listen carefully. You'll hear the word enough everywhere, especially when it comes to the anxiety, loneliness, exhaustion, division that plague our moment to such tragic proportion. Think about the United States. Think about sexuality. Think about gender dysphoria and it's a desire, a yearning for enoughness. You'll hear about people scrambling to be successful enough, happy enough, thin enough, wealthy enough, influential enough, desired enough, charitable enough, woke enough, good enough. Christians add righteous enough, pray enough, pure enough, whatever we mean by that. We believe instinctively, we teenagers, that were we to reach some benchmark of enoughness, then value, vindication, and love would be ours. I've just summarized marriage counseling. It's not just enoughness, that's just one of those questions. It's also connectedness. Brené Brown, gotta use Brené at a conference, right? What comes from inside of us is a very human need to belong, to relate. We're wired for connection. It's in our biology. Connection is critical because we all have the basic need to feel accepted and believe that we belong and are valued for who we are, as we are. Not for who we can be or should be, if I was prettier enough or happier enough or funnier enough, but as I am, actually loved as I am, which is the gospel, because of Jesus. God loves sinners. That's all there are. Our message is huge. Social media has captured it. You're good enough if you keep coming to our site. And they don't say that. It's the hit. It's the dopamine hit that keeps bringing people back. So instead of feeling enoughness, connectedness, I'm replacing it with dopamine. Dope hits. And you know another name for that? Addict. But it's human nature. It's human nature. This is the real stuff. And if parents can be the person who can provide this. All right. In your handout is... All right, I'm going to get into some weeds real fast. Stay with me. It's online, goodenoughparent.online. It's free, so check it out. We give your teens, or you as a parent of teens, a survey that you can do to determine your teen's attachment style. It's been well tested scientifically, research-wise, and an example of that is in your handout if you can give them. I didn't make enough handouts, so I apologize, but it's online. We also give one for you parents, because it's good to know what your attachment style is. You're not broken, it's just your attachment style, and your teen's attachment style, so you can see some of the conflict is between attachment styles. I'll show you some more. And if we have time, we can talk about it. All right, so, but on the front of it is the diagram. I want to cover the diagram. Now, so if you can see, it's connectedness is the vertical axis. Is there anybody out there that really has my back that I can trust who will pick me up when I fall? And then the horizontal axis is enoughness. Am I lovable? Am I enough? Am I right? And it forms four quadrants. This is the attachment style quadrants: secure, anxious, fearful, and avoidant. I'm going to talk about secure, avoidant, and anxious very, very quickly, but you'll see a sense of where we're headed with this and the value. I mean, you'll be able to determine if you think it's valuable for your parents. I think you will. And it's free, after all. Secure attachment. Secure attachment. High connectedness, high enoughness. Can I count on people? They just have been groomed. Yes, their parents were there, gooing one out of three times. They feel good about relationship. They feel like they're lovable. They feel like they're worthy. They like relationships. They express resilience when they're beat up, when bad things happen. They have high self-esteem. They're optimistic. They're curious. They have a high sense of belonging. They're great in youth groups or on teams. They tolerate ambiguity. So theology doesn't bother them. They're okay dialoguing about difficult issues and about apologetics. They love this stuff. They are able to regulate difficult emotions. They've been taught how to regulate. They grasp different perspectives. They're willing to dialogue with people who disagree with them, different perspectives. They're empathetic. Their cup's full, why not overflow? Compassionate. Their openness, they have high openness to people who are different from themselves. Think culture, think languages, think skin color, think denomination, think political points of view. They're actually good with that versus insecure. And they have a tendency towards, the scientists say, altruistic actions, meaning they help other people. These are great pastors in planning. They secure teens tend to trust their parents. They tend to trust other adults. Teachers love them through grade school. SEL works beautifully on them, if you know what I mean, teachers. And as teenagers, they're leaders. They listen well. And if that's your teenager, leave them alone. According to research, 60% of teenagers are secure. In a word, let me use the Hebrew word, that's crap. That was done pre-COVID. That was done in upper middle class white universities in their studies. There's no way it's that high. At best, it's 50%. I'm suggesting it's closer to 40%. So if you have two teenagers sitting next to each other, one's insecure. At least one's insecure. Okay? Insecure. All right, avoidant. I'm avoidant. I've taken this test a number of times because I wanted to avoid the test, but I'm it. Every time I score high, avoidant. I'm getting better. Our goal, by the way, is not to say that avoidance is broken and secure is not broken. It's we all need to be pushed towards secure. There's been only one secure, actually three, Adam and Eve pre-fall, and then Jesus, who've been really secure. It's basically you find me where I am and you help me using tips in the gospel to push me towards security, yeah? All right, here we go. The avoidant teen generally has a positive sense of self-worth. They're high on the enoughness, the horizontal. So they're capable and are interested in doing their own thing. And this, I think, explains one of your daughters. But they subconsciously, relationships haven't been good for them. Right? Their caregiver wasn't there for them as much as they perceived. You with me? So they're good on their own. Attachment needs, relationships are minimized in their brains. All right, my brain and compulsive self-reliance is the name of the game. So there's subconscious fears of connectedness. Relationships have hurt them. Remember I said our brains are designed to keep me from being hurt? This is one of the strategies is avoidance. I don't get hurt by relationships if I avoid them, right? Fondest childhood dreams, memories, are about him or her spending time alone. Guilty. Now, I had lots of friends, by the way, but I lived on a bayou and a hill, and it was all kind of forest and stuff. Man, I would go, I'd leave after breakfast, and I'd go home, I'd go out, I would capture snakes and frogs and other crazy looking things. I would play explorer, I loved it. I mean, I love playing with my friend too, but I'm telling you, when I saw this research, I went, guilty. They're self-reliant. They do things often without telling others. They're stressed by relationship issues in the family. Most of their daily stress, they would say, is responding to relational issues of the family. They can be resentful about that, irritable about that, that their family and parents keep bringing up these issues all the time. Why can't they just chill? And here's what you hear in counseling for an avoidant teen. Why do they take themselves so seriously? They need more space in their relationships. They feel trapped when their caregiver comes too close. So when you do the shoulder move for an avoidant child, you don't bring them close. You give them the space, but you put your hand there, but you give them a space. An anxious child we'll talk about, they want to be right in front of your grill. They're highly sensitive radar for manipulation, for being blamed, for being criticized. Even if you don't think you're criticizing and they feel it, they're highly sensitive to this. And what will they do when they feel it? They're going to go to their room. Or they're going to go for a walk or go play outside or go on their Game Boy or, you know, whatever. They're going to go be by themselves or social media where they don't have to interact. These are the trollers, right? And they'll initiate the, I love the psych term is, they will initiate disengagement protocol. It sounds like something from Star Wars, but you know what I mean. They're filtered emotionally. They're okay talking about what they're doing and what they've done, their projects, their grades, but they don't want to talk about their emotions or their emotional needs. I hate that in counseling when the counselor says, so Bill, where do you feel that in your body? I don't. I've started making it up. It's my shoulder. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And then I go to the other room. Conflict. They say, what conflict? People think they have commitment issues, and they do. They're not broken. It's just their brain. It's their subconscious. Passive aggressive. Not me, but other avoidant people are. And when bad things happen or the heat turns up, they'll disappear, right? All right, anxious. All right. I think we've created a much larger percentage of anxious teens than there were 10 years ago. And here's my theory. You know the crying it out idea, parents? You know what I'm talking about, where the babies cry out? And I think there's some validity to that, and I'm a fan of some cases, but I think we've over-applied that. And we've made 10 years ago, 15 years ago, this was the big deal. When a baby's crying, you let them cry it out, you leave the room. And I think we've created anxious teens. They're not broken. What they're saying is, I need these tips. I need to be brought back, but I'm going to push back. So I think this is a big, big, big deal right now. The anxious teen is subconsciously dissatisfied, frustrated with the amount of attention and the type of attention they receive from their parents and caregivers, which made them feel not enough. Cry, 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 something's wrong with me, I'm not enough. You see how subconsciously we go with that? And social media is all over that. Oh, you're enough on my site. They've learned to leverage, this is the thing, when you're working with an anxious teen, you help them identify their manipulation strategy. They leverage relationships in order to feel good. They leverage relationships in order to get your face in front of them, angry or not. They'll cut themselves to get you frustrated right in front of them. They'll lie to you, they'll disobey you in order to get you right in their grill because that's their goal subconsciously. It doesn't work, but that's the, are you seeing some pictures of people in your face? By the way, these are adults too. I'm not looking at anybody in particular. In psych terms, they still need others to emotionally regulate. That's what their brain is saying. I can't deal with emotions. I can't step down. They worry about being abandoned, dismissed, left out, fear of missing out, betrayed, social media, social media, social media, social media. They have these habitualized attention-getting strategies. And one of their strategies, Eugene Peterson called it paranoid loneliness. So I'm afraid that you're going to do something to me because I think I haven't seen you in a while. So I'll beat you up. I'll accuse you of something. You'll back off and I'll go, see? And then I'll blame you for the separation. Peterson calls that paranoid loneliness. Yeah, it happens a lot. I'm going to suggest a lot of people who leave your churches are doing that. And they would be anxious. And they're just waiting for you to give them a call going, hey, didn't see you last week. Well, that's the judgment and shame that I've been. That's why I left, Pastor, right? Oh, I can see a lot of people buying that one. They turn towards perfectionism. This is fascinating. So youth pastors, these could be the hardest working people in your youth program, but not because it's a good thing to do or they believe in the program. It's to get noticed. And if you don't give them the acclamation, if you don't give them the credit, boom, they will blow up and then blame you or blame the program or blame the church or blame somebody. It's fascinating, right? But you're lulled to think that, oh my gosh, well, I just want to fill my church group with these people. High maintenance. You'll hear them say, this is how that made me feel. But they don't mean happy. They mean angry, sad, depressed. I want to hurt myself. I want to, that kind of thing. The high suicide rate. anxious. Here's one researcher. Being in a relationship with someone who is acting out an anxious attachment style can feel like dealing with an angry customer while staffing a support complaint desk. That comfort they're looking for is just out of their reach. They are not satisfied. The gospel satisfies, and we parents can learn techniques to help them feel more secure. That's the idea. Real quickly, the good enough parent, and then we'll have a few minutes for discussion. It's free, it's online, goodenoughparent.online. 15 tips, video tips, one a day for 15 days for parents, for anybody, to tell you the truth. It's very biblical, very Christian oriented. We focus on this particular simple, uncluttered gospel. I want to read this to you quickly, because this is kind of the gospel that's immersing the whole thing about Jesus loving unlovable people. I just want to read this. We ask parents to say it twice a day, more than that if they're having troubles. Jesus follower, parent, guardian, strictly because of what Jesus did for you 2,000 years ago, God actually loves you. He loves you with all of his heart, as much as the Father loves the Son and the Son loves the Father. Remember me with my son? He can't love you any more or any less than he does right now, whether you think you've been a good enough parent or not. So you're witnessing to that critical inner voice in your midbrain. You're not a good enough parent. You can't handle this. Your child hates you. There must be a reason why. And we're communicating to you, oh, no. You are loved by God, whether you think you've been good enough or not. Get back in the fight. You can't add to this love or take away from it. Now, I get it. It often feels like you've messed it up or need to do something so that God would like you better. Not so. How do you experience it more now? Simple good news. There is something you can do and are invited to do. You can take daily baby steps to ask the spirit inside of you to make you know, experience, and feel just how much God loves you right now. Just ask. Make it a ask again later today. Remember the one out of three times your brain needs that too. Ask tomorrow. Make it a spiritual habit. This really helps. We do the same thing when I'm working with addicts. We have a simple uncluttered gospel card for addicts. We have a simple uncluttered gospel card for teenagers as well. It's a little bit different wording. But the idea is just to remind them that there is one person who is crazy in love with them as they are. And that's better than social media. All right, questions, thoughts? Oh, my son, thank you for asking. He's great. He stayed with the program. He worked it way. He apologized. He did all those things. Now he was on Young Life Board in San Francisco. Yeah, he's a good kid. And praise God that I didn't do what I wanted to do. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Could you go over some of the things about fearful?
It's going to be a little more complicated. So fearful would be a combination of anxious and avoidant.
Okay.
So if you do the teen assessment survey, and it comes across fearful, I'm going to suggest counseling because something's on. But the result of, they still need to be loved, right? We're still trying to push them to the secure. But it's a little of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit more about the LGBTQ? Children, adolescents, teens.
So, we are all looking for that person who is insanely in love with me. I want to feel good enough. I want to feel connected. If I'm not feeling that, I'm going to find some place where I can get it. Social media and much of education, unfortunately, is telling me I've got a broad range of options. And I'm going to go to one of those if I don't hear something else. If my parent is that person where I'm feeling enough to connect, as I feel secure, I feel like they have my back, I'm 2 years old, I'm going to suggest I'm not going to be interested as much in that. All right, I'll tell you a story. I had I was finishing up at my church here, going into this ministry, and I was going through Judges. I mean, you know, this isn't a place where we talk about God's love a lot, but I did, particularly at communion. And I had these two men come up to me after I spoke on Samson, like crazy, right? And they said, "Pastor Bill, we want to talk to you." "Sure, what's up?" And he said, "Well, we're gay." "Well, hey, fantastic, welcome to our church." And he said, "No, that's not why we're telling you. We've been listening to you preach through Judges." And they said, "We've been hearing about the love of God. We're experiencing it now. So we're actually going to make a commitment. We just want to make it public that we're still living together, but we're not going to have sex." I went, "Really? Can we go have a beer? Because I want to unpack what you've heard, because I don't remember ever saying that." Not in Judges. They started coming to a discipleship group that I was leading, and about 4 weeks in, they came to me again. They were, "Pastor Bill." I went, "What? Talk to me." They said, "We've been saying this prayer. And we have another commitment. We actually believe, we're feeling, we're experiencing being sons of God. We're no longer going to identify as gay." So what do you make of that? I work with a lot of gays, a lot of queers, and they're looking for the same thing I'm looking for. And in general, they haven't heard the gospel, is what Bronfenbrenner said. They've heard, if I'm good enough, maybe I can get the attention of my God. Remember the baby crying? Is there anyone there out there for me? So I think we've been focusing on the behavior, the activity, and we've made it a lot larger, because the heart of it is, I'm lonely in the universe. So I think we have to shape how we tell the gospel differently. And I think the fruit of that will be magnificent. That help?
Yeah, you give some interesting examples. I think in both the anxious category and the worried category, for instance, someone that has shown up to youth group and they're doing everything right, not for the joy of doing everything right.
Oh, yeah.
They're playing the game, they're getting the approval.
Totally. Can you help me? Could you stand up? All right, so stand up. So this is that person. Oh my gosh, she's great. She's working really hard, but she blows up teams because she wants credit, right? And it's irritable, and you want to give her a lecture. You're pulling out your Dobson books and going, "What would Dobson say?" And instead, I'll call her Sarah. "Sarah, I just want to let you know, I just absolutely adore what you're becoming. I would buy stock in you. I'm just so impressed by you. And what I'm seeing now, it's amazing. I think you can change the world. Thank you for coming." Do that every time you see her.
Wow. So avoiding just approving or ignoring the actions instead of just them as a person.
Playing it smart. So I'm a big Civil War buff. My people were on the wrong side. Just saying. But anyway, the best generals, and this is true too today, don't hit head on. Because you just throw bodies at the front line. What you do is you go around. You fight the battle differently. And that's what I'm suggesting we do. I think that's what Jesus did. In the Sermon on the Mount, I just did a new translation and writing a book on it. But the very first thing he said, you know, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," is basically enviable is the better word. Enviable are the people who are totally out. They're the outsiders, the unlovable, the unloved, the people who aren't in the temple, the Gentiles and Jews. "Blessed are you, because the kingdom of God is yours." I'm giving you the kingdom of God, the same thing I gave Abraham, I'm giving it to you. That's the first beatitude. So what did they have to do to get that? Come on. Nothing! They were still broken, demon-possessed, sick. Jesus says, "I'm giving you the kingdom, follow me." Now, that leads to messy churches. Because you haven't, and there's times to discipline. So if she does something that's very offensive, and I tell parents this as well, is say, "Look, do this," and say, "What you did was disrespectful, and I'm feeling hurt. We need to talk about that. Or I disagree with what you did or how you did it. We need to talk about that. But I want to let you know, I'm there for you." It's that connectedness and enoughness. those are the things that the reason that she's doing it subconsciously. She's not choosing. By the way, teenagers, their prefrontal cortex is not online. The thing that looks long-term, the thing that weighs, here's a great definition of the prefrontal cortex. It asks the question, is that a good thing to do? And it's offline in a couple of places, teenage and Washington. Totally offline.
D.C., not the state.
And by the way, this is not going to work. The shoulder move, forget that in Washington. Other questions? Yeah.
This time it's flashback. I used to run a daycare center years ago.
Yeah.
4-year-old, he was just terrible. Every transition, you know, nap time, meal time, whatever, and he just ran out of teachers. And so then all of a sudden I noticed I was assistant, so I was in charge of the care, but he changed.
Yep.
And so I'm just totally curious. So I think the parents would say, we were referred to the psychologist. And he basically, bottom line, he said, affirm him in the neutral
times.
It's
total
unconditional.
Yeah. This yeah, affirm. Yeah, totally right.
He's the best 4-year-old. He completely changed.
Which is what God does to us.
I know.
Right?
I loved it. As a believer, I thought, but this is not what the psychologist said. He just said, show him he's a nut. It's not by a little bad anger. It's just.
So our nursery programs for toddlers, teachers to take them aside, put your arms on their back and go, I just love you. I'm so glad you're here. We'll be here. I'm here for you. Anything I can do, I mean, I would buy, whatever you say in the context wherever you are, and watch and see what happens. Yeah.
Just for, I just feel like when you were talking all the way, you were just voicing to people's hearts their identity in Christ.
Oh, thank you.
And you said some for them that they needed to hear, and then when you used that illustration of coming around.
Yeah.
You didn't not deal with the problem.
No.
But you came around in a way that
right.
You're almost around.
That's right. I'm recognizing that in many cases, the reason I do stupid things, by the way, the reason that mass shooters are shooting up theaters, they're not rational, right? It's not called mental health. I'm not quite sure why it's not in the DSM we can't call what they have mental health issues, but they're not thinking straight. They're longing for something they didn't have. And some are psychotic. Very few, by the way, we think. Most of them are actually missing connectedness and enoughness, and they're ready to get killed. And so they're going to go out in a splash. We can do better, and we've got the stinking gospel. I mean that in the best possible sense. Other comments or questions? If you want to talk to me, I'm here for a little bit. There's stuff on the table. You can, if you want me to talk to your church or youth group, you have my contact information. Do go to goodenoughparent.online. It's free. Somebody actually paid for it to be free, so it is free resource. So please use it.
Awesome.
Thank you.